The stars are right, and that means it's time for another episode of Those Burn Darkness. I'm your host, the Man from Lang. Thank you very much for joining me today. This is part three of my preview of Edge of the Earth, the new expansions for the Arkham Horror LCG FFG. Dropped two of them on us on Thursday. The first, the Investigator expansion, includes the Investigators and the player cards, while the Edge of the Earth campaign expansion includes all of the scenario cards. We are going to take a look at the player cards in this episode. FFG spoiled, almost a dozen cards of the 250 or so player cards that will be included in the Investigator expansion. We have a lot of ground to cover, so let's get started. Before we jump into the player cards, I'd like to thank the patrons of this channel for their tremendous support. The Arkham Horror LCG community is amazing, and these people have gone above and beyond to bring you content like these previews. If you'd like to support the channel's goals and see your name on this list, head over to patreon.com, sign up for a tier of your choice, and claim your rewards. That would be awesome. Without further ado, let's get started. FFG spoiled, almost probably more than a dozen player cards. In their preview article for the Investigator expansion for the Edge of the Earth product, and we are going to run through them in this part three of my preview here. There are almost 40 plus investigators at this point, so apologies in advance if I fail to mention a combo with one investigator or another. I will do my best, but I'm going to try to move through these fairly quickly because there are a lot of cards to take a look at. And of course, we don't know the entire contents of the expansion, so it's difficult to see... Difficult to say right now whether there are combinations and investigators who would benefit from these cards more than others. We're going to start with the card fan that was featured in the preview. Some very tantalizing cards here, particularly that Seeker card up in the top left corner, Force Learning. It looks like it is a permanent that you can purchase at the start of a campaign. So looking forward to seeing what that one is. It appears to have Norman Withers on it, so perhaps another tool for a Norman Withers deck. There's that very interesting looking Guardian card in the upper right, where a man with an axe appears to be about ready to take down a Night Gaunt. Free event, fight action, that says Nathaniel Cho to me. Of course, we've also got Lily Chen in this particular campaign expansion. But we have three cards we can take a look at in this card fan. The first is Meditative Trance, featuring none other than the Mystic Investigator in this expansion, Lily Chen. Two cost event with a willpower and intellect skill icon, insight and spirit traits. Game text is, for each of your arcane slots that are, we cannot see, either heal one damage or one horror. Now, the spirit trait here synergizes, of course, with Calvin Wright. Calvin always likes healing damage and horror because he tends to walk that fine line between death and life with that ability of his. And of course, the heal horror synergizes with Carolyn Fern. Now, we cannot see whether the arcane slots need to be filled or empty. Now, I guess from a thematic standpoint, I'd sort of expect the slots have to be empty. Because, you know, sort of the whole empty mind thing. But judging by the game text on Dragonpole, another Mystic card that was spoiled in the preview article that I took a look at briefly in the Investigator preview, I think it's safe to assume that the healing will be based on the number of arcane slots that are filled, not empty. So if you're playing, say, a Lily Chen deck and you're able to keep those slots filled, so you can boost the combat and damage of your Dragon Pole, you'll be able to play Meditative Trance here and heal one damage or horror for each of those slots that are filled. Of course, the Dragon Pole gives you an additional arcane slot, so you can have an easy way to get three arcane slots off the bat. And FFG has, the designers have been being very generous with the arcane slots of late after being very tight-fisted in the early parts of the game's life cycle. Arcane slots were very hard to come by, but they seem to be a little more available these days, and I expect there to be even more arcane slots available with the release of the Return to the Circle Undone campaign expansion here later this month. There is one tarot card in there that lets you use your accessory slots as arcane slots and vice versa. Now, I don't think those are accessory slots will count as arcane slots for the purposes of this card, but arcane slots are certainly becoming more available. Now, I don't know. Cards that heal damage and horror are among the cards that I find to be among the least interesting in this game. Soaking damage and horror takes a far greater priority for me than healing damage and horror. So it's tough to get excited about a card like this. It's nice to have an event in the Mystic card pool that can heal damage and horror, so you don't have to take that action to play a card like Healing Word and then an action to trigger Healing Words, or Clarity of Mind, I believe, is the counterpart for horror. Not a big fan of those cards, so I prefer an event like this that gives you the opportunity to heal multiple damage and horror without having to take a bunch of actions to play either play assets to do it and then trigger those assets. So I think this is better than those cards, but again, not overly excited about cards that heal damage or horror. They're sort of a necessary evil sometimes, depending on the scenario that you happen to be playing. But they're not a card I certainly want to build a deck around or I necessarily reach for. So I think there are certainly investigators like Carolyn and possibly Lily who will get some use out of this, maybe Calvin as well. But it remains to be seen whether this is going to see a ton of play going forward. The second card we have in the fan here is a survivor skill. This is Strength in Numbers. It costs one experience point and it has one wild skill icon. It has the innate and synergy traits. I believe the synergy trait is new. I don't think we've seen that trait in on previous cards. Innate, of course, plays with, who is it? Silas's deck building options. He deals with innate traits, but of course this is already a survival card, so that doesn't really affect it. The game text here is Strength in Numbers gains one wild skill icon for each different class among cards you control. So this is it's an interesting card. I think for most investigators, most investigators who have an off class, they can control, say, one asset in their main class, one asset in their off class. So that would probably give them, you know, one or two additional wild skill icons on this, depending on your deck building restrictions. Minte Fan being the seeker who loves skills. She could, as long as she controls a couple of different assets, a survivor asset and a seeker asset, she could bump this up to three wild skill icons and commit this to, you know, if her, I believe it's her signature asset is on the table, she could commit this to any test for any investigator at any location sort of thing. Of course, there is Lola Hayes is the only rainbow investigator that we have at the moment. She can include cards from all five classes. It's important to note here that according to the basic rules, at least, neutral cards are not a class. So you do not get a benefit from playing, say, a flashlight as among the assets you control. So potentially Lola could bump this up to four or even five wild skill icons, but I'm not too sure that plays well with Lola's, while her ability gives her access to a lot of different classes, her ability also prevents her from accessing all of those assets on the table. So say if she has a Mystic, Rogue, and Seeker asset, she can only use one of those until she switches classes. So not entirely sure whether it's really worth the effort for Lola. It's another skill with a bunch of wild skill icons on it. It's hard to really get all that excited about Strength in Numbers. We've seen over the past couple cycles, we've seen a lot of skill cards that come with a pile of wild skill icons on them. Promise of Power from the Innsmouth, the Conspiracy, chief among them. So these types of cards, while powerful, because obviously wild skill icons are extremely versatile and powerful. The cards themselves aren't overly interesting. I don't think it's a card that you're going to be building your deck around. If you have an experience point and you want wild skill icons, perhaps like an investigator like Mintei Fan, and you control assets from a variety of classes, perhaps even you could go say versatile min and include an asset from another color, so you could boost this up to even 4 wild skill icons plus the one she adds, which would be 5. That's starting to look pretty powerful. 5 wild skill icons is nothing to sneeze at, and combined with Min's ability to contribute those skill icons to pretty much anybody on the table, that is pretty nice. But yeah, again, it's a pile of wild skill icons. If that's the sort of card you're looking for, then you can't really go wrong with one experience point. But again, you know, is in terms of interesting deck building to do, not a whole lot there to get too excited about. We can also see in the corner there Moxie 3. Now this one caught me by surprise. We can't really see much of the game text. It's a free asset that costs 3 experience points. The game text seems to be quite similar to Moxie's level 1 counterpart that was released in the Echoes of the Past expansion. Moxie 1, of course, costing 1 resource. It appears, now Moxie 1 does not let you soak any damage. It has doesn't soak any damage, only soaks 1 horror. It appears that Moxie 3 will allow you to soak some damage as well as the 1 horror. So that's a big change between the two of them. Now, unfortunately, the composures that were released in Echoes of the Past have not seen a whole lot of play since their release. I've played around with Moxie a little bit in a Winifred Habimok deck as a way of trying to mitigate her low willpower. I've played it in combination with Elder Sign Amulet. Obviously here, the Elder Sign Amulet providing you with a good way of soaking plenty of horror, so you don't have to soak that horror using the Moxie and then causing you to discard the Moxie before you really get any value out of it. It's not a very elegant solution to the rogue's willpower problem, but it did manage to get me through the secret name, so I can't really complain. It did the work. Unfortunately, it does appear as though Moxie 3 has that non-direct horror must be assigned to Moxie before it can be assigned to your investigator card clause, which means that it's going to be tricky to use. It only soaks 1 horror, only 1 sanity there. So if you get pinged for a horror and you're not ready to soak it with an ally or a card like the Elder Sign Amulet, your Moxie disappears and it's gone. And that kind of sucks. So while I've experimented with Moxie level 1, I don't think, you know, based on what I see here, I'm not overly excited about spending 2 additional experience points for Moxie level 3. I mean, a little extra damage soak is nice, but as long as it has that clause that I take 1 horror and I don't have the soak for it, it gets dumped on this and I lose the card. Not a particularly big fan of that. So unless there's some game text hidden behind strength and numbers there that I'm not seeing, I'm not particularly excited about Moxie 3. And making it free, hey, that's great. Saves you a resource. But if it's not going to spend much time on the table, then it's not going to see much play. Now, maybe if they bumped the sanity up by 1, so it had 2 sanity instead of 1, that might be worth considering, but from what I see here, I'm not particularly confident in this card gaining a whole lot of traction once this expansion is released. Let's move on to, we're just going to go through the cards. There's a lot of gold multicolor cards in this particular expansion. We're going to deal, we'll go Guardian Seeker, no rogue cards were previewed, Mystic, and then we'll take a look at the gold cards. The Guardian card we're looking at here is Sweeping Kick, level 1. It is a one-cost event with combat and agility skill icons. Spirit, Tactic, and Trick traits. Fight, add your agility skill to your skill value for this attack. This attack deals +1 damage. If you succeed, automatically evade the attacked enemy. Now, this is a fight action, so of course, and an event for that matter. So it will synergize with Nathaniel Cho. Has the tactic trait, so it synergizes with the Guardian Permanent, whose name escapes me for the moment. The trick trait actually synergizes with Rita Young, and I can't recall, I don't think she has access to many Guardian cards, but certainly having access to another fight action that adds her massive 5 agility to her combat value is pretty nice for +1 damage. And the spirit trait, of course, is nice because it synergizes not only with Calvin, but more importantly, the boxing gloves, which are the primary asset in the Nathaniel Cho starter deck. So if you happen to defeat an enemy with the boxing gloves, you can certainly find a copy of Sweeping Kick in your draw deck. You search your draw deck, find Sweeping Kick, and keep the combat train rolling. Now, the auto evade here is actually I quite like that for a guardian. It's important to note here that the auto evade is works against elite or non-elite enemies. So if you're facing a particularly dangerous enemy that dishes out a lot of damage, and in the guardian's case, horror is often a big concern because they are lacking in the sanity department. Being able to attack this thing, hit it for a bunch of damage, and then auto-evade it so it does not have a chance to attack you back in case you don't kill it is very, very nice, especially for a guardian for guardians who tend to have average to below average agility scores. So evading enemies using agility is often a non-starter for them. So this combines a fight action with an evade action, and I mean, what can you say? That's excellent action economy. It can protect a guardian from being attacked during the enemy phase if you happen not to kill it. If you're happening to fight a boss with a ton of health, this gives you the evade, so it will prevent it from attacking you, and then you can resume your attacks with it next turn. Of course, Lily Chen is portrayed on the card, and Lily is bare minimum. You know, if she's got balance of body out, she's hitting for 8 with this thing. 8 for +1 damage and an auto evade. That's excellent. So really like the looks of Sweeping Kick here. Lots of different, I think it's a pretty nice option, not just for Lily, but obviously Nathaniel Cho can get quite a bit out of this. It's got the tactic trait, so if you do happen to purchase Stick to the Plan, you can stick this on there and have an attack at your fingertips. And I do like the option of having that auto evade, especially for guardians who, while guardians are, you know, primarily focused on killing enemies, it really doesn't hurt to have that evade in your back pocket, especially if you start to run low on sanity like some of the guardians can do. So really like the look of Sweeping Kick here, and hope to see, I mean, I'm curious about that Guardian event that we saw in the card fan. Could that be another card for Nathaniel Cho? We will have to wait and see to find out. The other Guardian card that was spoiled in the preview is Butterfly Swords. It's a 3-cost asset that costs 2 experience points, combat and agility skill icons, item, weapon, and melee traits. As an action, you can fight. You get +1 combat for this attack. After this attack, you may exhaust Butterfly Swords to fight again, adding your agility skill value to your skill value for that attack. That attack deals +1 damage, and it takes up both hand slots. Now, I talked a little bit about this card in the Investigator preview as it pertains to Lily Chan, and its comparison to Dragonpole, the other weapon that was mentioned in the preview article. Honestly, I don't think dedicated Guardians are going to be all that interested in Butterfly Swords. The action advantage it generates is pretty nice, and so you get the one fight action, and then you get a second fight action with adding your agility, which, you know, not particularly good in most Guardians, but, you know, adding two or three to your skill value is always going to be nice, and the extra damage is nice. But I think a lot of Guardians, like a dedicated Guardian that is responsible for killing the big monsters on the table, two experience points is really an awkward spot on the experience point scale. I don't see a lot of Guardians purchasing this at this level rather than just skipping and going up and spending a lot of experience points on cards like Flamethrower or Lightning Gun or Shotgun or any number of, you know, the Holy Spear that was released into the Maelstrom. Any of those big weapons, I think, are going to be a top priority for the Guardian in the party that is primarily concerned with killing enemies. So I think this is probably going to be a Lily Chan card. Again, I think it's a bit too early to know which is going to be the best weapon, whether it's the Dragon Pole or the Butterfly Swords. Butterfly Swords in combination with Balance of Body, you can attack twice using these for two damage. Then you could trigger Balance of Body, attack again for a third damage. You get an extra attack with Butterfly Swords, so that would add another two damage to about five damage, you know, barring vicious blows and whatnot. And then, you know, you pair this up with two other different fight actions, maybe a 1-2 punch and a sweeping kick, and you're up to, you know, 8 or 9 damage by the end of it, which is pretty good, which is comparable to Dragon Pole, as long as, you know, if you don't have the arcane slots filled for Dragon Pole, I think this one's a pretty good choice. So yeah, I think it's a bit early to say, you know, which is going to be the best weapon for her. We don't know what the combat discipline does. Now, it occurred to me that the Balance of Body, the agility discipline for her, looks like it's going to be you're going to be making a lot of strikes, especially if you get lucky and pull some Elder Signs and are able to ready Balance of Body or flip it back to its unbroken side. Theoretically, you could just get 9 attacks in a turn based on Balance of Body alone. So, but you're going to be making a lot of attacks, but you're not going to be hitting particularly hard with those attacks. So perhaps the combat discipline is sort of the opposite. You're making fewer attacks, but you're going to be hitting. Maybe she gets a damage bonus or something like that if she's using the combat discipline. So she's hitting less, but she's hitting harder. And so I think that could be, maybe that's where that goes. Now, of course, Butterfly Swords does require you to fill up both your hand slots, which is never ideal in solo. Not a big deal in multiplayer, especially if you're the dedicated monster killer. But in solo, Lily's intellect is only 2, so she's not particularly good at investigating. So she's going to either need to resort to her arcane slots for cards like Sixth Sense and Rite of Seeking and whatnot, or just rely on the old trusty flashlight from the core set. She does have the option, of course, of buying Bandolier, which can help mitigate that somewhat. But, you know, when I looked at the cards that are available in the Mystic card pool and the Guardian card pool that take up hand slots, there's not a lot there that Lily really wants. So taking up both hand slots isn't, I don't think that's going to be a huge deal for her. It's not, I don't think it's a deal breaker in any way. So again, when I just sort of run the numbers on Butterfly Swords, it's pretty good damage in the end. I think Dragon Pole is slightly better and provides slightly larger attack bonuses, but it requires you to fill arcane slots. And, given Lily's deck building restrictions, I'm not entirely sure that that is going to be that may not be an option. So we shall see. But in terms of just action advantage, Butterfly Swords is pretty good. But yeah, I don't think many dedicated guardians are going to be spending 2 to 4 experience points on a weapon that honestly doesn't provide a very large combat bonus and does not dish out a lot of damage. I think they're going to skip over this and go right to the flamethrower, the holy spear, and whatnot. We have a seeker card written in the stars. It is a one cost event that has a wild skill icon. It has the insight trait. It is fast and you may play only during your turn. Discard the top card of your deck. If that card is a weakness, shuffle it back into your deck. Otherwise, for the remainder of your turn, while that card is in your discard pile, commit it to each eligible skill test you perform. So, first thing we notice is that this is has the insight trait, so it does synergize somewhat with Joe Diamond's hunch deck. Not sure if it's a great option for Joe, but if he does want to play, put this in his hunch deck and play it for free, that is an option. Now, this card really synergizes nicely with the investigator in the box, Norman Withers, who can also play this for free if it's on the top of his deck. And he already knows what the top card of his deck is, so he can he gets a lot more versatility out of this. It also works well with in the investigator Gloria Goldberg, who was released in the Dark Revelations. Her promo card was released in the Dark Revelations novella. Synergizes nicely with Alyssa Graham, the mystic ally from Undimensioned and Unseen. Scroll of Secrets from which was released in the Secret Name, and the upgrades came out in For the Greater Good, especially since they swapped the action on Scroll of Secrets to a free triggered ability. That makes that card a lot better. And of course, we have Scrying from the core set. Scrying's a bit slow, I've found, and I haven't played it in a while. But if you want to control the cards that are on top of your draw deck, it's the way to go. Now, the power here is actually pretty good, I think, for a one cost event. If you can, if you can commit the so you discard the top card of your draw deck. There are plenty of skills around these days that have tons of wild skill icons on them. If you can happen to discard one of those cards, committing a card with a pile of wild skill icons on it to 3+ skill tests during your turn is pretty good. I would certainly be quite happy to say commit Inquiring Mind, say I'm just picking a skill, or say even Promise of Power, 4 wild skill icons to 3 tests and generating three curse tokens. Is you're going to pass a lot of tests if you're committing four wild skill icons to each of them. So that's pretty good. So I think for investigators like Norman, Gloria, and if you're using cards like Alyssa, Scroll of Secrets, or Scrying, this is a pretty attractive option. I think that obviously the card is much less impressive if you are blindly discarding cards from the top of your deck and hoping for the best. I just don't think you're going to get a whole lot of value out of that. Occasionally you'll get lucky and discard something with a pile of icons on it, but for the most part, I think this card is going to work best with a little bit of setup. So you're really going to need to be playing somebody like Norman or Gloria, who can really has those deck manipulation options at their fingertips, and can get the most value out of this card. This otherwise, yeah, I don't think you're going to be all that interested in playing this. It's just a little bit too random for what it can do. Discard the again, you're going to be discarding a card. It might be a card you really need, or it just might be a card that has one or two skill icons on it that don't really match with what the skill tests you're going to take this turn. So, yeah, not impressed if you're not playing one of those investigators, but I think, man, combine this with Inquiring Mind or Promise of Power or any of those, like even Min, if she can team this up with Strength and Numbers that we looked at earlier, it's a lot of wild skill icons, and those are going to help you pass tests, especially I found playing on hard difficulty lately, those a pile of wild skill icons can really help out. So if you're able to guarantee, say, 3+ wild skill icons on 3 tests during a turn, that goes a long way to mitigating some of the that variance in the chaos bag. So a good option if you are playing that manipulation game. If you're not, then you're probably not going to be playing Written in the Stars. That brings us to the Dragon Pole, which I have talked about both in the Investigator Starter Investigator Preview, as well as a little bit earlier talking about Butterfly Knives. This is a 3-cost asset with a combat skill icon, item, weapon, melee traits. You have one additional arcane slot. You may fight. You get +1 combat for this attack for each of your arcane slots that is filled. If at least 2 of your arcane slots are filled, this attack deals +1 damage, and it takes up a both hand slots. Now, I think, you know, based on the math that was keeping me up at night last night after this massive preview dropped, Dragon Pole is a pretty good option for Lily because the combat bonuses are pretty good if you have those slots filled. So theoretically, you know, you're getting that one additional arcane slot. So there's 3 arcane slots. If you can fill all 3 with a fight, investigate, and evade asset, you're getting +3 combat with this thing. That's really good. And if at least 2 of those slots are filled, you're getting that +1 damage, which is all important. If you combine this with a card like Balance of Body, one of her disciplines, you could take your first action to fight with Dragon Pole. You'd be getting, say, you just have 2 slots filled. She's got 4 combat. You'd be up to 6 combat, which is pretty good against most enemies. So you're making a 6 skill test for 2 damage. You could swing again, another 6 skill test for 2 damage. Swing a third time after you trigger Balance of Body. You're swinging for 6 for 2 damage. And then you could use 1-2 punch to get another 2 attacks, 1 for 1 damage, 1 for 2, and finish off with a sweeping kick for another 2 damage. And the auto evade, that's 11 damage right there. And we haven't even talked about, you know, Lily getting lucky, pulling an Elder Sign, and readying Balance of Body, and then getting 3 more attacks. You know, it's just as long as you can generate enough different attacks, you can generate a pile of additional combat actions, fight actions with this. And so I think Dragon Pole is a pretty good option for Lily, as long as she can fill those arcane slots. That's the thing I'm not entirely sure about. If Lily's deck building restrictions are similar to that of Norman, and the preview article seems to suggest they are, she may only have access to 5 level 0. She may only have access to a bunch of level 0 Mystic cards, and then 5 Guardian cards, if I've got that right. So she's going to be moving away from her Mystic cards. So it's probably not an issue. It's more going to be getting enough of those Guardian cards. She's only going to have access to 5 level 0 Guardian, maybe 5 level 0 Guardian cards, and then she'll have to be spending her experience to bump those up. So as long as Lily can keep her Mystic slots filled, this is a pretty good option. Again, two-handed weapon, not great in solo, especially given Lily's two intellect, but if she doesn't need to wield a flashlight, arcane slots can be filled with cards that can boost her investigate, so she can rely on her willpower to do that instead. So quite like the look of Dragon Pole. Looking forward to giving it a try in Lily. And who knows? We don't know what her combat discipline does, and so maybe that synergizes better with the Dragon Pole. That brings us to the Astronomical Atlas. It is a 3-cost asset that costs 3 experience points, willpower, and 2 intellect skill icons, item, and tome trait. It has 2 free triggered abilities. The first, Exhaust Astronomical Atlas, Look at the top card of your deck. If it is not a weakness, attach it face down to Astronomical Atlas. Max 5 cards attached. And the second free triggered ability is commit a card attached to Astronomical Atlas to an eligible skill test. If that skill test succeeds, add that card to your hand instead of discarding it. Limit once per test, and it takes up a hand slot. So again, this card is similar to Written in the Stars in that it the first free triggered ability synergizes very nicely with cards such as Norman Withers, Gloria Goldberg, Alyssa Graham, the Scroll of Secrets, and Scrying. If you're able to manipulate what the top card of your deck is, or you happen to be Norman and know exactly what the top card of your deck is, you can exhaust the Atlas and move it over to it. So if you happen to know there's an Inquiring Mind sitting on the top of your deck, awesome. You can exhaust the Atlas, put the Inquiring Mind on the Atlas, and use it for a future skill test. Now, this is a particularly nice pickup for Norman because it synergizes nicely with when I was talking about in his the Investigator preview. Norman decks tend to avoid playing skills because they lock him out of his special ability. At least they did. Now that he's got his new signature card, Livre de Bon, he can get those skills off the top of his off of his deck and either bring them up to his hand to swap a card or commit them to a skill test. Now, Astronomical Atlas lets him do something similar, so you can include more skills in your Norman Withers deck. If a skill ends up on top of your deck, you can use the Astronomical Atlas to move it to the Astronomical Atlas and then clear that slot up, so revealing a card below that you may be able to play for cheap for that minus one resource cost. Now, the other really nice thing here about the Atlas is that, you commit that card to a skill test, and if that skill test succeeds, you get to bring it back to your hand. So you stack a Promise of Power on this thing. You get four wild skill icons on one test plus a curse token. That test is probably going to succeed if you're committing four wild skill icons. You pop that back to your hand, and then you're getting another four wild skill icons on another test and another curse token. If that happens to be, if you're playing that curse deck, every curse token adds up. So the ability to commit a skill to two different tests is very, very good. Not going to complain about that, especially if you can get some of those high, those skills with a pile of wild skill icons on them. You're going to get a lot of utility out of this. Now, again, much like Written in the Stars, if you're not playing an either Norman, who knows the top card of his deck, or Gloria, who has a lot of ways of manipulating what card is on top of her deck, it's going to be a lot less impressive if you're just blindly drawing cards off the top of your deck and stacking them on this. I'm not sure I'd be willing to pay 3 experience points and 3 resources for that sort of variability. It's just a little bit too random for my liking, but I think certainly Norman or Gloria could get a lot of value out of the Astronomical Atlas. Or if you're just playing an Investigator who can find a way to manipulate the top card of their deck, that would be a good way of leveraging some of those skill cards. I'm trying to think offhand if I'm not sure if there's a Mystic Investigator who can really place the skill game. So, you know, maybe if we do see a Mystic Investigator down the road who really likes skills, similar to Min or Silas, a card like this is going to be, man, this is right up their alley. So again, much like Written of the Stars, good in certain decks. I think they'll really appreciate this tome. If you're not playing those sort of manipulation decks, you're not really going to see a whole lot of use out of this. That brings us to the first gold multi-class card of the preview. This is Medical Student, a 2-cost asset with a willpower skill icon, ally, Miskatonic, and science trait. It has a response: after Medical Student enters play, heal 1 damage and 1 horror from an Investigator or ally asset at your location. It has 1 health and 1 sanity, and it takes up the ally slot. So we've already seen one Miskatonic student, the art student way back in the Dunwich Legacy releases. We had art student, which of course lets you discover a clue when it hits the table. Not sure a medical student is as good as the art student. Again, the ability to heal damage and horror, while being a necessary evil, it doesn't really get me all that excited because it really doesn't do anything unless you've taken damage and horror. And for the most part, barring a few scenarios that really pile it on, I find that I'm generally able to manage the amount of damage and horror I've taken just through soak on allies and other assets. But of course, the ability to heal one damage and one horror simply for playing an ally is quite good. The ability to heal ally assets is going to be key during the Edge of the Earth campaign, considering all of those expedition members are allies, and once they're gone, you're gone. So having a medical student along to keep them sane and healthy could be very important indeed. Of course, the heals horror element synergizes with Carolyn Fern, while that Miskatonic trait synergizes with Miskatonic archaeology funding. I've tried to play around a little bit with archaeology Miskatonic or Miskatonic archaeology funding. I haven't really seen a lot to get excited about there yet. This doesn't really add much to that excitement, unfortunately, because it is healing damage and horror, but again, if you want to heal damage and horror, this is a nice option, and it provides you with another health and sanity. Doesn't soak as much as the art student does, doesn't discover you a clue like the art student does, but I tend to find cards that heal damage and or horror a little bit dull, and given the type of campaign where we're going to be heading into, that will feature a lot of allies and probably a lot of damage and horror, you probably can't go wrong by bringing a medical student along. Of course, medical student is a guardian and seeker card, guardians and seekers alike can benefit from the medical student. Perhaps guardians would like to have that little bit of extra horror, so while seekers, of course, would like that damage, and of course, allies always need to be healed. So, not terribly excited about this card, but I can certainly see its value, especially heading into the upcoming campaign. That brings us to Blur. Wow, this card is cool. Blur, level 1. So this is the first of several gold multi-class cards that cost XP. We haven't had gold cards that cost XP in the past. As you may remember, back in the Secret Name, they released all the gold cards, and then when they upgraded them in For the Greater Good, they produced or created class versions for each of them. So, for example, the Grizzly Totem, you ended up with a Seeker version and a Survivor version. Scroll of Secrets, you ended up with a Seeker version and a Mystic version, and so on and so forth. Blur is a 2-cost asset that costs 1 experience point. It is a Rogue and Mystic card. It has 1 agility skill icon. The spell trait uses 3 charges. As an action, if Blur has charges remaining, evade. For this evasion attempt, you may use willpower instead of agility, and you get +1 skill value. If you succeed, spend 1 charge, and you may take an additional action this turn. If you succeed by 0, take 1 damage, and it takes up an arcane slot. Wow, there are so many investigators who can benefit from this card. Now, first of all, it seems like this is a part of a new triad of investigate, fight, and evade spells. We are going to look at another one in that triad here in a moment. The investigation one, we haven't seen the fight one yet, but I assume it exists. So another triad. Spell trait, of course, synergizes with many, many Mystic cards at this point in the game's life cycle, including Uncage the Soul, if you want to play this for free, or Marie Lambeau, who can triggers off that spell ability to gain additional actions. Now, the nice thing here is that as long as you have charges remaining on this thing, you don't have to spend a charge to trigger the evade. So as long as you keep one charge on this, you can continue to use this to evade, which is pretty nice. Now, it's an interesting option for both high willpower investigators and high agility investigators, I think. High agility rogues like Winifred, for example, or Monterey, who is the rogue investigator in this particular expansion, both of them are going to have 5 agility, 6 with the plus 1 skill value, which is pretty good with evasion, considering that many monsters do not have very high evade values. So you don't really need as high an evade value as you say may need a fight value if you're fighting. So while most rogues have miserable willpower, they do have the option of using their agility instead if they prefer. Now, the really sweet thing about this card is that if you do succeed on the evasion attempt, then you can spend a charge and you get an additional action. That is fantastic. It's unlike some of the cards that we have seen in these triads. I'm thinking of Miss Cerulea, which lets it sort of gives you an additional action, but it's very restrictive on what it lets you do. It just lets you move to a neighboring location. This just gives you an action which you can use to do anything, which is way better. Man, just gaining that additional action to do whatever you want. Of course, if you succeed by 0, you're going to take a damage. That's probably not going to happen all that often. That's a pretty narrow window. You have to be pretty precise to hit just to succeed by 0. So if you fail, you don't take any damage. If you succeed by 1 or more, you don't take any damage. So I think the odds of you taking damage with this card is going to be very small. And man, there are some pretty nice combinations here. Take Akachi, for example. Akachi adds an additional charge to Blur, so she can generate 4 additional actions with this thing over the course of a scenario at least. That is pretty good. Dexter can bounce this with his Elder Sign ability. So he plays Blur, he evades, he uses up those additional actions, and then he draws an Elder Sign, bounces this back to his hand, and then plays it again, and he gets more additional actions. That's pretty sweet. Marie benefits already from the spell trait. The spell trait gives her sort of an additional action, and then she can generate more additional actions by using Blur. So Marie, you can get her up to 5 actions in a turn with this sort of thing. And of course, we haven't discussed recharge yet, which would allow you to add more charges to this thing if necessary as well. The 1 level of recharge not being so good, the higher level version being much better. But man, I really like this card. I mean, for a rogue or a mystic, the ability to take that additional action is very, very strong. And I think this one is going to see a lot of play going into the future. That brings us to Divination 1. It is the investigate piece of the triad. It is a 3-cost asset that costs 1 experience point. It is a seeker and mystic card. Comes with an intellect skill icon. The spell and augury trait uses 4 charges. As an action, you can investigate. For this investigation, you may use your willpower instead of your intellect, and you get +1 skill value. If you succeed, spend 1 or 2 charges. Instead of discovering a clue at your location, discover 1 clue at your location for each charge spent. If you succeed by 0, choose and discard a card from your hand. This takes up an arcane slot. Again, much like the this is part of the new I guess multi-class triad of fight, investigate, and evade assets. Again, it has the spell trait, so it's going to synergize with a ton of mystic cards, including Uncage the Soul and Marie Lambeau and many others that Robes of Endless Night. Man, the list just goes on and on at this point. So if you have an investigator who prefers using their willpower, you're going to still get that +1 skill value, or if you have a very strong intellect, you're going to get that +1 skill value. And if you succeed, then you have the option of spending 1 or 2 charges in order to gather one or to discover one or more clues at that location, which gives you a nice option, especially if you're playing in solo and you have those, like most locations have one clue on them, but occasionally you do run into those locations that have two clues per investigator. So having this in your back pocket to be able to just say, okay, I can use this to discover one clue at some locations, and then I'll use two charges to pick up two at another. It's very nice. Again, if you succeed by zero, you have to choose and discard a card from your hand. I don't think that's going to happen all that often. Again, nothing happens if you fail, and you know, if you're a high willpower or intellect investigator who's already getting plus one skill value, it's going to be awfully tough to succeed by zero. More than likely you're going to succeed by one or more. So I wouldn't, the downside on this is really minimal. Again, since it uses charges, Akachi gets an extra charge. Dexter can bounce this after he's used all the charges and then play it again with his, bounce it with his Elder Sign and then play it again, with, his ability. So he can refresh all of the charges on this and discover more clues. And Marie benefits, of course, from that spell trait. Again, if you're looking for more charges, there's plenty of cards in the card pool. I believe, Recharge is the obvious one, but there are others. So it doesn't give you an additional action like the Evade version does. Having the option to discover one or two clues, depending on how many charges you spend, is pretty nice. So far, I think the Evade version of the Triad is very, very good, and I think the Investigate version here in Divination is pretty good as well. So I'm liking the looks of this Triad so far. So we'll see what happens when the box is released. We'll see what the combat or the fight one does. See if it keeps up the winning streak here. I think that brings us to our final card. Oh, that was spoiled. Man, there are a ton of cards that were spoiled in the preview. This is Michael Lay, Experienced Hunter, 4-cost ally that costs 5 experience points. He's a Guardian and a Seeker card. Intellect, combat, and wild skill icons, ally, and detective traits. While he is on the table, you get plus one intellect and plus one combat. As a response, after you successfully investigate, place one resource from the token pool on Michael Lay as evidence to a maximum of 3 evidence. And then as a response, when you initiate an attack, exhaust Michael Lay and spend one evidence, you get plus one damage for this attack. He has 3 health and 3 sanity, and he takes up an ally slot. Now, this guy is... Man, there's a lot. 5 experience points is a significant commitment if you're purchasing a card that costs 5 experience points. So you expect to get something powerful in return. And I think Michael's good enough. He gives you plus one intellect, which is going to help you discover clues, which you need to do in order to stack that evidence on him. So this is really geared towards, I think, somebody like Joe Diamond who can both fight and investigate. Somebody like Joe can get this guy down. He can investigate at locations to pack this guy full of evidence tokens. And then when time comes to fight, Michael helps him in that regard by boosting up his damage. Now, the ability to deal additional damage outside of cards like Vicious Blow or fight actions on events is still pretty rare. There aren't a lot of cards that help you boost damage. So the ability here of Michael to give you plus one damage for essentially doing something that you were already going to do. You were already going to investigate locations to gather clues. And this guy just gives you a little bit of a perk on top of that to deal additional damage. Now, 3 health and 3 sanity, that's a fair amount of soak. You can soak quite a bit of damage and horror with this guy, especially if you throw in some healing for an ally. So that's pretty good. The only downside I can sort of see with Michael here is I mean, 5 experience points, that's not going to fit in an awful lot of decks. You really have to commit if you want to purchase Michael. The other downside is that that second response, you have to trigger it when you initiate the attack. And you have to exhaust Michael to do it and spend the evidence. So you don't know whether the attack is successful or not. So there are going to be times when you fire up a fight action against an enemy, you trigger Michael's response, exhaust him, spend the evidence, and then you draw an auto fail token, or the attack fails and you get nothing out of it and you've lost the evidence. You don't you've got to trigger that response before you know whether the attack is successful or not. So there are going to be times when Michael fails to come through for you. Not too sure, honestly. I can't really think of an investigator offhand besides sort of somebody like Joe Diamond who would be interested in a card like this, just because he does have the option of investigating and fighting. Initially, I thought of somebody like Roland, but Roland tends to want to get clues by not successfully investigating, but by using triggering his response. So I'm not too sure. I don't think he'd be all that interested in Michael. Trying to think offhand whether there's anybody else. I mean, +1 intellect and +1 combat is very attractive, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm sure there are many deck builders in the community who are better than me, who can think of options for this guy. Again, 5 experience points is pretty pricey, but I think you can, if you're able to trigger that +1 damage consistently, I think he's probably worth it. Oh, I've been talking for like 3 hours straight, I think, at this point. That is going to do it for my Edge of the Earth player card preview. Oh, man, judging by the preview, there are 250 player cards. I'm sure that includes duplicates coming in the Edge of the Earth Investigator expansion. That is like an entire cycle's worth of cards in one box, all for, I think it ends up being about $40. So, I don't know what I'm going to do when this is released, because that's a lot of cards to review. I'd probably have to change up. Nate and I are going to have to change up our review, how we review cards with that many cards dumped in at once. But once this box hits, I think deck builders are going to have months and months of joy ahead of them. I like the look of a lot of the cards that were in the preview article. Some obviously are more interesting than others, and it's tough to say. I mean, with so many cards being released at once, there are obviously combos that we will not know about yet. So we will just have to wait and see as more cards are spoiled or leaked and or released. We shall see how this expansion shapes up. But so far, some really good cards in this box. I hope that you have enjoyed my Edge of the Earth preview. Stay tuned for more great Arkham Horror content. I've got a few videos in the pipeline. And Game of the Day will be making a return here shortly. And of course, we've always got deck techs and whatnot. Hope you'll stay tuned for that. Until then, I hope that you have a fantastic day. That's going to do it for this episode. If you enjoyed what you hear, remember to like, comment, and subscribe. If you need to contact me, I can be reached at manfromlang@gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter @manfromlang. Until the stars are right, keep your shotgun close and your other sign closer. Take care out there, and happy investigating.